Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. I was rushed in my response to the email that a gentleman said about you didn't answer all of Ellie's questions. There were two questions. One was, once baptized Greek Orthodox, always baptized Greek Orthodox. That's something that she heard somebody say. And so I was starting to give an answer and I ran out of time. So just to kind of recap, the point to remember is this true or not? He asks, and the answer, or she asked, the answer is yes, insofar as baptism changes you ontologically. It eliminates the condition of original sin. It eradicates all sin and all the effects of sin if you're old enough to have committed any sins before your baptism. And most importantly, it infuses the life of God into your soul. It animates it with divine grace, with sanctifying grace, as we call it in the Catholic Church. So it makes you now capable in your soul of receiving other sacraments and of being happy with God in heaven. And without that, Jesus says, you can't be saved, at least for those who have the opportunity to be baptized. So the reason I'm going into that is to say that the powerful effects of baptism, which is wrought by the power of Jesus Christ in the sacrament, this is why once you're baptized, you're always baptized. You can't be rebaptized. If you were to try to get rebaptized, it has no effect whatsoever because what's done is done, and it's permanent, it's irrevocable, etc. So for somebody to say, if you're Greek Orthodox, to say once you're baptized Greek Orthodox, you're always a Greek Orthodox, I understand what that person means, because in the Catholic Church, we would say the same thing. Once you're baptized and you're a Catholic, you will always be a Catholic in from that ontological standpoint. Even more so if you receive the other sacraments of initiation. If you are confirmed, and confirmation has a similar effect on the soul, it impresses a character. And I've used the analogy many times of a signet ring that a king might wear when he's going to issue a decree. It's on parchment, there's hot wax, and he presses his ring into the hot wax, and it transfers the image of this royal symbol of authority from the ring to the wax. And St. Thomas uses that as a kind of analogy to say something similar happens, although not in a physical way, that when you are not only baptized, but also when you're confirmed, that the sacrament impresses a character of sorts. It conforms you in this irrevocable way to Jesus Christ. Even if you fall into sin later, even if you're lost, God forbid, you still have this ontological change that takes place. So, in fact, what I would say is, I understand what the person means by saying once baptized Greek Orthodox, always Greek Orthodox, but in reality, once baptized, one is Catholic. You could live apart from the Catholic Church. You could live in a tradition that has lived apart from the Catholic Church for 1,000 years. Very sad situation on both sides, and fault on both sides, to be sure. But it doesn't mean that you're not baptized into the Greek Orthodox Church. The Greek Orthodox Church is kind of like, in a way, kind of like a denomination, or it can be seen in that way. The Catholic Church is not a denomination. It's the church that Christ established. And there are different groups that have, for various reasons, removed themselves from the unity with the church and yet maintained apostolic tradition, they've maintained apostolic succession, they have valid bishops, valid priests, valid sacraments. No one disputes that, but yet they live at a distance. They live apart from the Catholic Church from which they left. So I don't want to over answer this question, Mark, but since you brought it up and I thought it was worth delving deeper into, I hope that's further help for you. Thank you for that. Now, lest anybody say, well, you're just saying all that because you're a Catholic. Well, that's true in a sense because I believe in what I just said. But if you're interested in, let's say, an Eastern Orthodox writer who arrived at the same conclusions, I would take a look at the writings of Vladimir Soloviev, who was a 19th century Russian Orthodox believer who wound up becoming Catholic. And as part of his mission, he wrote extensively to explain to his erstwhile Orthodox brethren why they should become Catholic too. And so he was writing from the standpoint of somebody who is deeply steeped in the world of Orthodoxy and its claims and its polemics and all of those things. And that would be worth reading. And you can get access to some of those things at the Catholic Answers website, catholic.com. The late, great Father Ray Ryland, who himself was a convert to the Catholic Church, he came in from the Episcopal Church, and he wrote a number of very good articles that brought to the fore many of these points that were made in the 19th century by Vladimir Soloviev in defense of the papacy, for example, and other issues as well. So those kinds of articles are free for the taking. You can go to catholic.com and just type in Soloviev, S-O-L-O-V-I-E-V, and you'll find them. So I think that will give added food for thought. 888-914-9149. I just want to say we're getting a large influx of emails from people who are writing to the Dodgers organization and saying, I'm really angry by what you're doing with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. They're a bunch of men, painted quote-unquote ladies, who are trying to act like religious sisters, but not really. And the Dodgers have caved in, and they've kowtowed to them. And so many of you are sending us the emails that you're sending to the Dodgers, and I appreciate them, and I want to acknowledge them, but obviously I can't read them all. So just know that I'm seeing them, and every few seconds more and more are coming in. And just know that we appreciate you taking a stand to say something to the Dodgers. If enough people do that, then maybe, just maybe, they're going to learn a lesson. 888-914-9149. How about Elizabeth now in Concord, California? Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was hoping that you would be able to explain to us the difference between a priest who is listed as a parochial vicar versus a parochial administrator versus a pastor.
Sure. So these are distinctions that we see in canon law that denominate the level of authority and responsibility that a man would have if he's in one of these various positions. So let's start with pastor. So the pastor is the priest who has the official charge as delegated to him by the bishop of the diocese for this parish. He's the top authority at the parish. And canon law provides certain rights and privileges and responsibilities to the pastor that are not present in the case of a pastoral administrator. So let's say a priest is named as the pastoral administrator. He doesn't have those canonical advantages and certain rights and things that the pastor would have. He's been placed in charge of the parish, and it may be in the interim while the bishop is waiting for, I don't know, maybe for a man that he wants to be pastor there to become available. It could be that this is a young priest, and he's not ready to become a pastor in the fullest sense, and so he would be made a pastoral administrator. He has charge of the parish. He has the duties that you might expect a pastor to fulfill, but he's not officially the pastor. and there are different reasons for that. Now, a parochial vicar would be in the case of a parish where you have, let's say, a pastor and maybe a second priest or even more than one priest. A parochial vicar would be the priest who is the vicar of the pastor. So he, in other words, in the absence of the pastor, he would function as one of the parish priests who would have the authority delegated by the pastor to say mass and hear confessions and do all those things. So it would be, I think, maybe akin to what we commonly hear of an associate pastor. Sometimes you'll hear that, or an associate at the parish level. These are all things that are distinct in the church's law, even though you don't necessarily make those distinctions when you say that. But does that make more sense, Elizabeth?
It does. So would you say that the pastor is higher than, as far as in charge of the church, than the vicar would be?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So it would be like pastor, then the parochial vicar, and then the parochial administrator in that order?
No. Because typically you would either have, you wouldn't have a parochial a parish administrator or a pastoral administrator or a parochial administrator, depending on which term they use. You wouldn't have that person and a pastor because, in essence, they're fulfilling more or less the same role, but the pastor has those rights and privileges under the law that I mentioned a moment ago. The pastoral administrator does not have that, and yet he's still in charge of governing the parish. He would be more limited in his authority, but he still would be the authority for that parish if there were not a pastor named there.
Okay, that makes perfect sense.
Okay, good. I'm glad.
I appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Elizabeth. There's a website that I like. It's called Canon Law Made Easy. I think it's canonlawmadeeasy.com. And the canon lawyer who writes it, her name is Kathy Caridi, C-A-R-I-D-I. I've never met her. I'd like to meet her someday, but I think she's based in Rome. But she's an American, and so lots and lots and lots of these canon law questions that people have, especially marriage issues, but this kind of thing as well. She writes very helpful, very accessible blog posts explaining these things. So for your sake, Elizabeth, I'll bet you if you went to her blog, Canon Law Made Easy, and then just typed in that question, difference between pastor and parochial vicar, I wouldn't be surprised if she's already written an article about that, and that's there for the taking. So hope that helps. Thank you. Let's go to Shanna now in Pennsylvania. Hi, Shanna.
Hello, Shanna. Patrick, I have a question.
Okay.
Yes, hi, Patrick. I have a question for you.
Okay. Please go ahead.
Hello. Yes. I would like to know where in the Bible does it state where the RCIA classes are part of becoming a Catholic?
Nowhere. There's nowhere in the Bible that says that there are RCIA classes. That's a development in the church over time. You can see an ancient precursor to this in the mystagogical catechesis by St. Cyril of Jerusalem, for example. And St. Cyril of Jerusalem was writing in the 300s. And so he gives basically an RCIA class to the catechumens who are preparing to come into the church. And his mystagogia, as it's sometimes called, or mystagogy, was his a series of sermons and teachings that he would give to them over a period of time as they prepared to be received into the church. So you won't see it in the Bible, but you will see it in the history of the church. Does that make sense? And where did she go? Oh, looks like we lost her. Well, maybe she was having trouble with her phone, I guess. That's too bad. Well, I hope that's helpful to you. Thank you. Let's go now to Karen in Milwaukee. Hi, Karen.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to make a couple of things that I wanted to say. One is regarding that demonstrating and what can we do, and that is hard to know and so forth. But I looked at this as she has a treasury there. She already has women congregating and getting together. And since it's May, I feel like I have such a devotion to Our Lady. We've experienced medical miracles. I have a lot to be grateful for, and I felt I owed it to her, especially this month, to say, let's not forget the obvious. We're Catholic. We all know this, the power of the rosary. But I'm reminded of Mother Teresa at the airport. You know this, Patrick, you know this story. Mm-hmm. And they ask if anybody had a weapon, and this little wrinkled nun stands forth and says that she does have a weapon, and she produces the rosary. And you know what? It's all, the power is in the hands of the holder of the rosary. When you have passionate women together, men, children, doesn't matter, there's a lot of power, and that would far trump any demonstration of any kind that they could do. So I just wanted to shout out to her that while you're together and discussing these things, get the rosary out and pray it. And when the more you pray it, you know this, Patrick, I'm sure, and Silas does too, I'm sure as many of the listeners do, when you continue this and you continue what some think is the monotony of the rosary, I read somewhere that it washes out the monotony of our sins. And when you look at it that way, wow, you know, that's some pretty powerful stuff. So we need to do that. So that's demonstration. And another point that was brought up earlier is about kids. And I'm thinking, gosh, summer is over. Having been a CCD instructor for decades, actually, these children, when you take them genuinely, and sincerely, their questions go way beyond what the curriculum is in front of them. And they are thinking about these things, but they don't know they can ask them. So I wanted to tell that one listener earlier that she convicted me. I've got to find out a way to have some sort of a open house for kids that they can come to the parish hall or something once in a while and just discuss, because I've gotten a lot of letters and a lot of phone calls and a lot of sweet little things and thank yous from the children that they want to know and they want to learn. And this does not come up at the supper table.
Fair enough, Karen. I can tell that you're passionate about this, and it sounds like your little flock is in the background. I think I heard a couple little voices back there. So you know, from experience, right? Well, that's awesome.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And I do concur with your comments about the rosary as a powerful weapon. No doubt about it. Obviously not a weapon of violence. It's a weapon against sin and against apathy and against error. And what a good weapon for us to have. Thanks, Karen. Appreciate it. How about Chuck now?
Building Wes.
Oh, sorry, Chuck, didn't mean to interrupt you, but just want to put you on the air. West Dallas, Wisconsin, is that right?
That is correct.
Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Cyrus and Patrick. I love the way you have fun building our church.
Awesome.
And I have to tell you, the day of the trans shooting in Tennessee, I was in a public school board meeting, and I brought up during my three-minute spiel that we should hire retired police and military officers, volunteers protecting our children and staff in our public and Christian schools. And I'm now working with our police department towards this effort. So this is what I feel, you know, and our schools, our public schools are promoting this transgender, and it's, these people are going to be upset and may do the same thing over and over.
Maybe. Let me jump in there because, you know, I get frustrated, Chuck, and maybe you do too, when CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, LA Times, and these groups, they leap on an incident like the one that just happened. What was it, yesterday? Some guy crashed into the, you know, or barely whatever, crashed into like a gate near the White House, and he had a Nazi flag or some such thing in this moving van that he crashed into it. And immediately the noise machine, the left wing noise machine, started up about white supremacy and all this. The guy was from, you know, I think he was raised in the U.S., but he's of Indian origin. And when you look at his picture, what was interesting is a lot of these news outlets conveniently neglected to show his picture. He's not white. He's brown-skinned. His ethnicity is from India, I believe. And he just didn't fit the profile in any way of a so-called white supremacist. And so the news organizations, they neglected to show his picture because it didn't fit the narrative. If he had been white, that would have been all you would have seen. And here's why I'm bringing this up, Chuck. Because we don't want to make the same kind of mistake when it comes to the fact that the woman who killed all those people most recently at that shooting in Tennessee, that she happened to identify herself as trans. We have to be careful, and we should resist the temptation to do in reverse what some of these news outlets typically do. They do it all the time. And that's to say, oh, look, a trans person did this, therefore, let's use it as a stick to go against that issue. I don't think that would be the right thing to do for obvious reasons. So, yes, that's the one and only incident that I'm aware of anyway, where the perpetrator of this terrible mass murder identified in some way as trans. Perhaps there were others, that just, this is the first one I'm aware of anyway. So I don't think we can make very much of that, nor should we make much of that. Rather, and maybe this is where you're really coming from, the key is to protect the children and the teachers and the other people who are working at these schools from mass shooters of any kind, any color, any ideology, no matter how they identify. The key is not so much that, but how do we protect these children? So this is a little, if you don't mind, this is a little tweak that I'd like to offer so that we don't wind up doing the same thing that these left-wing media outlets do all the time. You see where I'm coming from, Chuck?
Yes, thank you. And I'm glad you brought up that point. It covers all bases, so to speak.
Yeah. What kind of reaction, if I can shift gears here for a minute, so you mentioned that you're working with like the school board meetings and things. Obviously, nowadays, you can't help it but feel a bit nervous about being in public places. You go to the grocery store, you go to the mall, you go to school, what have you. And there's just this constant spate of these mass shootings. And what kind of reaction are you getting in these school board meetings, or what are you seeing? Are people now saying, you know, I didn't used to think it would be a good idea to have an armed guard at a school, but now I think it's a good idea? Or are you seeing resistance to that? Or what are you seeing? Because I don't go to these meetings. I'm curious what you're seeing there.
Yeah, I've been going to the meetings regularly. And after I made that comment about suggesting retired police officers, volunteer police officers, and retired military, I received a person that's involved with school, not on a school board, but mentioned, hey, that's an awesome idea. We have to do this.
Yeah.
And he's background military and police officers. So that's the response I received, Patrick.
Are parents getting on board with this? Are parents saying, yeah, we want an armed guard? I mean, I realize what you're seeing is just a microcosm, and who knows what other people are saying elsewhere. But where you are in Wisconsin, are you seeing parents supporting this idea or resisting it?
You know, I just brought this up and I just started this. So it remains to be seen how the response is going to go forward. Mm-hmm. So hopefully we do have police officer in one of our schools that I'm aware of. But we need both public and Christian schools protected.
Yeah. Well, all schools,
in my opinion,
all kids, all schools.
Yeah. And I have grandchildren. I'm 71 going on 72, and I'm doing this for the children and the staff and all our children.
Yeah.
So that's where I'm coming from.
You know, you can go into a department store now. I was going to say Target, but we have issues with Target right now. But you can go into stores like that and buy bulletproof backpacks for the kiddos. And it's just unthinkable to me now that that's pro forma. That's pretty much standard. If you are going to send your child off to school, there are parents who either on Amazon or going into the stores, they're buying bulletproof backpacks because the kids need them. What a terrible thing.
Yes. Yes. And just the other day, we had three.
Hey, Chuck, I'm out of time. Sorry about that. I'm coming right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show right after this. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Our sponsor, Christendom College, offers our listeners access to free online classes at getprinciples.com/truth. Acclaimed philosopher Dr. John Cutteback is teaching a class now, Understanding Human Nature, at getprinciples.com/truth.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
This just in, I'm looking at an article that came out yesterday afternoon. And headline, Target, this is the retailer, Target holds emergency meeting over LGBTQ merchandise in some stores to avoid a Bud Light situation. I mean, hey, Target, this Bud's for you if you don't make some changes. So here's from the article.
Too little, too late.
We could have a lot of fun with that. Some Southern Target stores were forced by the corporation to move LGBTQ pride merchandise away from the front of their locations after customer outrage so that they can avoid a Bud Light situation. I love it. So Google is now a verb. I mean, you Google things, right? Bud Light, I think it's going to move into the popular lexicon. You know, you don't want to get Bud Lighted or Bud Lit. That'd probably be the correct way to say it. It doesn't have quite the ring to it. So
they've been Bud Lighted.
Bud Lighted.
It works.
That means it's like an auto demolition. You've destroyed your business. You did a Bud Light. So anyway, many Target locations across the country feature massive June Pride Month displays on an annual basis, with items this year ranging from tuck-friendly bathing suits for transgender people. And I hesitate to read all of this only because this is a family show. I'm just going to leave it. But the retail juggernaut has been criticized by some conservatives for the displays with children's items, particularly irking many customers. A Target insider, and this is a Fox News story, says, and I think it might be an affiliate. I have to take a look. A Target insider said that many locations, mostly in rural areas of the South, have relocated pride sections to avoid the kind of backlash Bud Light has received in recent weeks after using a transgender influencer on a promotional campaign. I hope that they're relocating these items to the dumpster.
And the dumpster is on fire.
A Target insider said there were emergency calls on Friday and that some managers and district senior directors were told to tamp down the pride sections immediately. We were given 36 hours and told to take all of our pride stuff, the entire section, and move it to a section that's a third the size from the front of the store to the back of the store. You can't have anything on mannequins and no large signage. This is according to a Target insider. And on and on and on. So yeah, maybe a bit of damage control. Who knows? We'll see what happens. This tuck-friendly swimwear, you have to read the article to get more info on that. They're becoming untuckable in their product line, I guess. Or they want to hide the tuck-friendly stuff. So I don't think that's a movie Sean Connery would have starred in. Honestly, Cyrus, I don't know if that would have been a popular movie. Remember The Untouchables? Remember that movie?
Yes.
Kevin Costner? So if they were to like change the theme, and like this, you know, fearless group of government employees who are going after crazy ideologies. Well, I don't know. I don't know if that would be a title that would work. All right. Hey, by the way, you never did get me that Happy Meal spot that I asked for.
Oh, I didn't. No, I got.
Do you have it?
I got busy. I don't have it. I don't have it ready. I'm sorry.
Come on.
I know. I dropped the ball.
Come on, man.
Come on, man. Oh, I got that. I'll save that.
See if you can get that. Maybe we'll fire that up before we're done today.
Well, it's funny with this the Target thing. So they're saying, oh, we're pulling all of this stuff because our managers and the people that the staff are being attacked. They're being attacked. So we have to pull this for their safety. It's not true. No one is attacking the staff at
Target.
I don't think so.
I think they're exaggerating
but
that.
If that's true, then why is it also removed from their website? It's gone.
What's that MC Hammer song? You can't tuck the. I mean, how does it? How does that song go?
Can't touch this.
Oh, okay. Because if that song were re-released, it could have a totally different meaning.
Leaving my mic off.
All right. See if you can get that spot, the Happy Meal spot. I think that would be good because, you know, that was sort of in the same area here. I got that MC Hammer song in my mind now. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Irma. Where is Irma? In California. Good morning, Irma.
Hi, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I like your take on where to put the transgender merchandise in the dumpster.
There you go. I think it would fit.
I was calling because
A joke. That was like a double entendre, but that's okay. Go ahead, Irma.
I wanted your opinion on me only wanting to accept Holy Communion from the priest.
Is it okay to only receive Holy Communion from the priest? So at Mass, do you mean like if there were a priest and a layperson distributing Holy Communion, that you would go to the priest as opposed to the layperson?
Yes, I would. I prefer that.
You have that right. I'm sure there are people who would roll their eyes and look down on you and say, oh, come on, Irma, it's Jesus you're going to receive. Doesn't matter who's giving you Jesus. You would probably meet with a lot of that kind of disdain. But you have the right. I mean, if you prefer to go to communion, to receive communion rather, from a priest whose hands are consecrated for this, lay people's hands are not, then you have that right. So if you wish to do that, then unobtrusively, perhaps without drawing attention to yourself, you can do that. Sure. Just be aware that there were people who would look at that askance and they would judge you and say that you're crazy for doing that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm just
worried. I'm not one of them, by the way.
Oh, okay. That's great. Okay. Well, I've chose to do that for a while now, and I just, you know, keep thinking, going back and forth. Am I being silly? And so I just thought I would ask your opinion.
I understand. And there are times when I know how it is. You feel like really strongly, I would really like to do this, or I'd really like to do that when it comes to receiving Holy Communion. Sometimes it's not always possible. Sometimes it's not always advisable. But if you can do this in a low-key way and not draw attention to yourself, I think that's fine, personally. I mean, if somebody can say, I have a right to receive Holy Communion from a lady who's giving out Holy Communion at Mass, well, if that person has a right to go to that person, you have the right to go to a different person.
Okay, great. That sounds like a good answer. Thank you so much, Patrick.
You're welcome, Irma. Hang in there. Let's go to John now in Tempe, Arizona. Hi, John.
Hi, Patrick. I was just calling because, you know, I've been a Dodger baseball fan for decades. More specifically, I've always been a Vin Scully fan.
Yeah.
And I was really happy to hear the comment on email about the Catholicism of Tommy Lasorda and Vin Scully. But recently, and I may have heard it on Relevant Radio, but I heard somebody talk about the Angelus magazine produced by, I think, the Diocese of Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a feature on the Catholicism of Vin Scully. And when I heard that on the radio, I immediately looked them up online and subscribed to the magazine, which is fabulous.
Mm-hmm.
And by sheer happenstance, and one of my coworkers who knew how much I love Vin Scully arranged for me to meet him one time at Chase Ballpark when the Dodgers came here to play the Diamondbacks. And I got to take my family up to the press box and meet Vin Scully. And he was the most gracious, outwardly focused gentleman I believe I've ever met in my life. And he spoke to my children and me, and had one of the stagehands come over and take a picture of all of us together. And to realize now that, in fact, if they want to Google something, Google his reception speech at the Hall of Fame and how what high regard he held the Dodger organization in. Mm-hmm. And to see that they have degenerated to this desecrates not only the Holy Eucharist and Catholicism, but it even desecrates the legacy of such fabulous people like Vin Scully.
And I hear you, John. I do. You'll be happy to know that before our merger here at Relevant Radio, in the West, what is Relevant Radio now used to be Immaculate Heart Radio. And when Immaculate Heart Radio acquired 93 KHJ, when we were acquired that big station in Los Angeles, that of course is where a lot of the Dodgers, games were broadcast.
93 KHJ.
Yeah, that one. Vin Scully, he actually was present at the celebration. Archbishop Gomez was there. Doug Sherman, president of Immaculate Heart Radio, was there. Vin Scully was there. And he gave a little message publicly about how happy he was that Catholic Radio was now operating on 93KHJ. And so he definitely was, as a Catholic man, he was a supporter of his Catholic faith. And I concur with you that it would be shocking to him if he were alive to see what the LA Dodgers have done with the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence. I know they love they love the notoriety, they love the press and attention and all that, but it's not the right kind of attention, if you ask me. John, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's go to Rick now in Minneapolis. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Patrick. Very quickly, I just want to say we're a longtime supporter and listener. And originally, I was just going to call this morning to tell you that on a History Channel, I saw that Nagasaki was not a planned location. It was a problem with the weather at the planned location, and so then they diverted to Nagasaki. So I was doing that, and then my wife said, wait a minute, I just called a station to tell them that Target had pulled the items off the shelf here in Apple Valley.
Oh, that's good.
So I wanted to mention that again. And then lastly, I just thought, with all this lobby power that group has, I wonder, if it wouldn't be a great marketing idea to try to have some lobby group that is like CCJM or something like that. Anybody that believes in a God.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting idea.
To push back against ideologies that are just so crazy. So anyhow, thank you
for what you're doing,
and it's wonderful to listen to you, and God bless you.
You're very kind. Thank you, Rick. And before, when you go, just keep listening, because I have some information on the Nagasaki thing that might be of interest to you. So this is from the National World War II Museum, and it has this to say, just sheds a little more light on this. The Target Committee, appointed by President Harry Truman to decide which Japanese cities would receive the Little Boy and Fat Man atomic bombings, did not place Nagasaki among their top two choices. Instead, they identified Kokura as the second target after Hiroshima. In Kokura, a city of 130,000 people on the island of Kyushu, the Japanese operated one of their biggest ordnance factories, manufacturing, among other things, chemical weapons. The Americans knew all this, but strangely did not target the city yet in their conventional bombing campaign. That was one of the reasons the Target Committee thought it would be good as an option after Hiroshima. The third choice on their list, Nagasaki, was a port city located about 100 miles from Kokura. It was larger, with an approximate population of 263,000 people and some major military facilities, including two Mitsubishi military factories. Nagasaki was also an important port city. Like Kokura and Hiroshima, it had not suffered much thus far from American conventional bombing. And then it goes on to talk a little bit about the weather issue here. But Nagasaki was definitely on the list. There was a series of different cities that had been put on the list. And according to what I read in the history, Nagasaki was fairly high up the list. But as you say correctly, because of bad weather that was coming, they decided to change the date. And they also changed the site. So it shifted from Kokura to Nagasaki. I find this endlessly interesting, horrifying, but endlessly interesting as well. Thank you for that. We'll take a break, and I'll be right back with more of the Patrick Madrid Show. Be right back. How are you aligning your financial plan with your Catholic values? Is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? Our sponsor, Creative Planning, has options. More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
Can't tuck this.
Oh, boy.
Can't tuck this.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now.
Can't tuck this.
888-914-9149.
Can't tuck this.
That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Down. The song sounds familiar. I'd say that's right on target, Cyrus.
I think it's a hit.
Right on target. You hit the target with that one.
I hope so. Nice working like with it. You.
Be at peace. Oh, come on, Target, you people. And Dodgers, come on, you people. Bud Light, come on, you people. I think it's too late for Bud Light. We'll see what happens with the other two. Very clever, Cyrus.
Just having a little fun.
Yeah, I'll say. Now, to make good on our promise, did you get that McDonald's Happy Meal?
I have it right here.
Okay, because it ties in with the... Because you were talking earlier in the program today about how your kids, you know, before you really started talking to them about these cultural issues, they kind of said, come on, Dad.
Come. They look around like, oh, no, someone's going to hear that this is our father and...
And saying that there's only two genders or
right.
something
how,
like that.
Oh, how ridiculous, Dad, saying there's only two genders. And now they're on board. It took a while because I didn't realize that they were getting indoctrinated in their schools. And so I wasn't standing strong. I just didn't talk about it. It's like, this isn't really happening. This is all being blown out of proportion. And then my son came home and he was talking about how they turned one of the bathrooms into a gender-neutral bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, wait, that they're really doing that? And he's like, yeah, they were, you know, people were going into the wrong bathrooms. But he didn't say the wrong bathrooms.
Right.
He was saying the bathroom that they felt comfortable in.
Right.
And I was like, what is going on? And so I dug deeper and so I've been standing strong. But here's the original. And this is when I learned, I think, that.
This is probably about 3 years ago, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
Thereabouts. And just so people understand, it was you and I were having a discussion. This is a bit condensed, but it was at that point that you were saying what you said a minute ago about, you know, your kids are like embarrassed. Oh my gosh, Dad, I don't want to hear in public that you're saying that there's only two genders, because they were getting that indoctrination in school. And how things are now is different, but this is how things were then, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So, okay, let's play it.
So I was like, hey, I'd like a Happy Meal with a girl's toy. And my three kids let me have it. How dare I ask for a girl's toy?
Now, it's sort of like mildly depressed meals for parents like you.
No kidding, man.
Who are just watching civilization crumble before your very eyes.
Good evening. Can I take your order?
I'll have a mildly depressed, gender-neutral meal, please.
The Patrick Madrid Show.
What kind of toy could you expect to get in one of those things?
8 a.m. Central.
On Relevant Radio.
Yeah.
That was great.
Yes.
Did Neil make that or did you?
Yeah,
I think
Neil
made that.
Neil's a genius. Yeah, he's the best. But that was real. I mean, we were in line at McDonald's and I had girls in the car, and so I asked for the girl Happy Meal. When I was a kid, there would always be the girl line of toys and the boy line of toys. And usually I liked the boys line of toys.
More. Yeah.
Naturally.
I think most kids tend to gravitate toward the toys that are more of interest to boys and most of interest to girls. Now, it doesn't mean every last child will do that. That's
right,
okay.
Right.
But generally speaking. But the transgender ideologues, they hate that idea. They hate it. Anyway, thanks for playing that, Cyrus. I appreciate it. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Monica in Aurora, Illinois. Good morning, Monica.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. How may I be of service today?
Okay, hold on. I'm going to run outside real quick. Okay, sorry. I was on my Bluetooth. I'm at work. I guess I was just calling in because I received word this morning through the news about the desecration in the shrine right here in Des Plaines, Illinois. And I guess I just wanted to ask that me, you, and everybody listening, if we cannot just pray a Hail Mary. And, yeah, and that we pray for increased conversion and just kindness, compassion towards each other's religions, just all of that.
Yeah, and I think that's a very good idea. So we'll ask everybody to remember this in their prayers. I have not heard of this until you just mentioned it, but I'm seeing in the news that there was damage done, arson damage done to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in Des Plaines, Illinois. So according to this, it looks as though the priest associated with the shrine said that the suspected arsonist set fire to the outdoor chapel of the resurrected Christ. It was badly damaged. Statues, sacred art, and the plaza near the chapel were also damaged by the fire. So I was not aware of that. Apparently it happened last night from what I can see. So it's a very good idea that you have in mind to say prayers of reparation, Monica. And I thank you for that. We will do that for sure. Let's go now to Lene, listening patiently in Roswell, New Mexico. Good morning, Lene.
Good morning, Patrick. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
My parents go to the Methodist Church. I'm trying to convert them to Catholicism, but here we are. Their church is voting this week on, of course, you know, it's all in the news, the big change in the Methodist Church.
Yeah.
And one of the things that had me puzzled, and Google couldn't give me a good answer, and I'm like, I'm going to Patrick, is the theology. And it says the post-United Methodist Church theology will be based on pluralism, Jesus, mm-hmm. one of many.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go to the global Methodist Church, it'll be based on Orthodox / classic Wesleyan, Jesus one and only. Mm-hmm. So what is pluralism?
You want me to interpret that for you?
Yes, if you could, please.
Okay, so pluralism is a term that can mean different things to different people, and I'll share with you what I think they mean by the term with regard to this voting for. They're going to split. The United Methodist Church is going to split, and it's going to be over the issue of LGBTQ. So all of the issues surrounding things like same-sex marriage, is it okay for people to pursue being trans? What about ordaining people? Things of that nature. It's all part of this bigger picture. And the word pluralism, as it's being used by the people who are promoting this stuff, they're using a term to mask the fact that they have overthrown the gospel. They have basically flatly contradicted and denied, number one, what Jesus himself said in Matthew chapter 19, where he said, in the beginning, God made them male and female. And he describes the paradigm of marriage as between one man and one woman, and the binary of sex, one man, one woman. There is nothing else other than male and female. Now, we all know this, and science shows us this, and experience tells us this, but you have these ideological maniacs who are intent upon denying that. So they're using the word pluralism, which in its normal context would mean that you have a variety of different things within one category. Take the United States. We have the motto, e pluribus unum. You know, out of many, one. So one country that comes out of the pluralism of many different ethnicities or many different religious backgrounds or many different political opinions and so forth. So traditionally, politically at least, socially, pluralism is seen as a good thing because it means that you're going to have a variety of different opinions and different backgrounds and different things. And that's just the nature of humanity. But they're using it to say that we are open to accepting these sinful activities as if it were merely just this person has his opinion, that person has his opinion, when in reality what's happening is they are denying and turning away from what Jesus Christ himself said. Forget about John Wesley. I don't really care what he said, but I really do care what Jesus said. I really do care about what St. Paul and the other apostolic writers say. And they're very forthright and specific on this issue that these kinds of things are sinful. So that's what's happening. The real God, is, as far as I can tell, the real God or the real altar at which some of these people worship is their sexual ideology. and their own peculiar sexual activities. That's their God. And so they're splitting this denomination of Protestantism right down the middle because they're more interested in serving their God than serving God. They're more interested in propagating their false gospel than obeying the gospel. That's why this is happening. And, you know, we should take this as a cautionary tale. The Catholic Church is not a denomination. The Catholic Church is the church that Christ established. But whenever you have human members of an institution and you don't stand firmly for the truth, this kind of thing is what's going to happen. And we pray that, you know, people will see the light, see the truth, and stand firm in it as opposed to going down these hell holes of ideology. And it's just, it's a tragic situation, but, you know, this is what happens when people don't follow the gospel. So anyway, that may be an over-explanation, Lene, but that's my take on it.
No, that's extremely helpful, and because it falls in line with one of their other items, which is their goal is the post-United Methodist Church is social justice is their goal for going to mm-hmm. church, mm-hmm. whereas the global is saving souls, which, I mean, that's what we want to do, but... Yeah, and all the other stuff, yeah, it's just, but pluralism just, I was like, and yep, that's what I was thinking, so I just wanted to make sure I was interpreting pluralism properly, so thank
you. I think you are. Yeah, you're welcome, Lene. I think you are, and well, we'll leave it at that. Thanks for that. We've covered a lot of ground today. We'll do it again tomorrow, God willing, and the creek don't rise, but I plan to be here, and I hope you will too. My sincere condolences to a couple of the people we talked to today who have had deaths in their family. This is true of yesterday's show as well. If you're aggravated by what the Dodgers are doing, channel that aggravation in a positive direction. Let them know that you are irritated by their kowtowing and buckling under the pressure of the LGBTQ plus movement. If you and enough people do that, maybe things will change. Until tomorrow, I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.